Welcome to Maximum Geek. I'm Josh Curry.
I'm Jeff Curvin.
And Jeff is Angry Jeff tonight. That's right, Angry Jeff.
My computer is not my friend.
No, his computer's not his friend. My network connection isn't my friend. And, it's about the size of it. So, we've got lots of crispy topics for you. I don't know if crispy's the word. I think because of the evening we're having, we're just going to start out with one there will be lots of discussion about, I think. We're going to talk about fair use for Windows Mobile, or fair use for WM. Okay, let me just give you a quick breakdown. This is basically Microsoft's latest DRM cracked. This is the DRM that's used in Play For Sure devices. Napster uses it. A lot of the subscription, pretty much all the subscription services out there use it. It's a pretty pervasive technology. And Microsoft has announced that they're going to patch, and they've already got a patch worked out that they'll be pushing out before long to fix this problem. I'll let Jeff give his take on this real quick, because
first off, I don't think the patch is going to do a damn bit of good, because if they any way that they alter the format, okay, fine, that's great for PCs, but now all of the Play For Sure devices are going, what the fuck is that?
Well, they're actually
Unless they're also going to do ROM updates for all of the Play For Sure devices from all of the different manufacturers, I really don't see how this patch is going
to
work.
Well, sounds like that's what they're going to do. I mean, they're pushing out to all their channel partners. They're pushing out patches across the board. I'm not 100% sure how they're handling that, but and there's a big, long-winded, very technical email that went out.
So then what are they going to do? Make the patch mandatory? You can't download new music until you upgrade the ROM on your device. And what if you end up with the one company that just can't seem to figure out how to release the ROM in a timely fashion?
Well, I don't know all the details. Have you read what the details are? I mean,
no, you never sent me that link.
You sent me a link. Wait a second, you sent this to me.
But
that's a nice dodge.
I think this is huge.
That's a nice dodge.
What I find really interesting about this is that, and I am riffing off of the Engadget podcast, which I was listening to on the way home. I really think that this is actually going to, as long as the music companies don't lose their head and get all freaky about this and demand that it be fixed, really, really fast, I think this will actually, help the music industry if they don't kill it first.
Well, here's my question. I'm stopping. Okay. Go ahead.
That was just the
Go
introduction
ahead.
To what I was saying. I have yet to subscribe to a service like Napster or Rhapsody because the idea of renting music just doesn't appeal to me. But if I were to be and this fair use for Windows Media does work on rental music. If I could pay $15 a month to download any music I wanted, strip the DRM off of it, and keep it forever and play it on as many devices as I want, and not have to worry about any of those goofy restrictions, how many of you have bought music that later on, you through one way or another, couldn't play because some of the licenses got screwed up? If this stays around, like I think it will, because I really don't think the patch has a chance in hell of working, then that's going to mean that, you know, a lot of people are going to, you know, pay the $15 a month.
Who's
going
to pay every month? You're going to keep paying if you don't have to. If you've got a majority of the songs you want, and it's no longer beneficial for you to pay $15 a month, if you're looking at less than 15 songs a month you want...
all the music that's ever going to be recorded has already been recorded.
No, but... so, maybe once every 6 months you pay your $15. Or, once you've gotten to a point where they're leasing... are there 15 songs a month you wanna download? Most months?
I would say that I could go for quite a while downloading, you know, let's even say 50. I could download 50 songs a month every month.
And that's all you would download. You wouldn't...
for several years.
Most people aren't looking for that. I mean, you're going to be an exception in that case.
If you know it's out there, then what's the point in just downloading it all really fast and hoarding?
Well, it's cheaper.
Yeah, there's no hurry.
Okay, people, you're acting like people are just going to go, oh, $15 a month, no big deal. But if you're paying that service anyway, then it doesn't matter. Any play for sure device, you're going to pick, you know, you're not... you can play it on your PC, any play.
Except that Plays for Sure is not anywhere near as reliable as Fair Play when it comes to actually getting the music on the device and it being playable. I know a lot of people that have had all kinds of goofy difficulties.
Well, here's the thing.
Getting Plays for Sure, which is one of the most ironically named things I think I've ever seen. They've had a lot of trouble getting Plays for Sure content to actually play, even though they have legitimately purchased it.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, I don't think that... I think you're way overestimating the number of people who are going to be willing to pay that $14.99 a month indefinitely once they've got it and they've ripped it and they're done. I mean, most people... don't want billions of songs. I mean, I mean, sure, I could go for probably a year or two, but if I download a lot of songs, why not? If it's out there, I want it now. I would binge if I could do that. I'd binge. I'd download a bunch of songs, and then I'd wait. I mean, personally, I don't see the point in only downloading a few a month. I want to get all the ones I want, and, you know, that would not be in 1 month, that's for sure. But my point...
And next month, there's nothing coming out that you'd be remotely...
Okay, I'm not going to finish my sentence.
And the month after that, nothing.
You're right, Jeff, I'm wrong.
No, I really
I'm,
don't
you know
see
what?
The, you
know
what?
You
really don't
let me
see why
finish
this is
sentence.
Such a hang-up.
I'm not saying your argument won. I'm saying you're talking over me.
Even if you don't download.
Okay, I'm...
even if you don't download, I think the opportunity to download new stuff whenever it comes out and not have to worry about, you know, whether or not it's going to be playable on your particular content, you know, or your particular combination of hardware, I think that's worth $15.
You think that's worth $15?
I would
have
no problem.
My whole point here is, you and I are not the majority. Most people are cheap. Okay? You and I have come back to this discussion a lot over the years. Okay? It keeps coming back to you think that people are just going to keep paying the money. And I think that's bullshit. I think you just act like people are just going to, you know, I think I should pay it. We had this conversation when we first talked about Solo Media, and it's the same principle. Yeah, there is some benefit to paying that money. I'm not saying there's not. But I'm saying, once I've downloaded several hundred songs, I can wait a while. And if there's one or two or 10 songs I want that come out that next month, because generally there aren't 15 new songs a month I want, far from it, then the 99 cents from any of them is a better deal for me. As long as I'm looking at less than 15 songs. I'm saying that financially, for most people...
But even then, you're going to pay... But even then, you're going to pay the 99 cents.
Yeah, but not
cents. To... Right now, I... Up until this was released, I have avoided anything. I don't even buy Fairplay stuff anymore. I've gone out of my way to avoid plays for sure. Because I, you know, I've got Fairplay music already that I've purchased from the Apple Music Store that, since I've decided I don't like iTunes, I no longer can play. And that's bullshit.
Well, and I don't disagree, and that's why I won't be buying anything from iTunes. But the bottom line is, the way the subscription models work, it's not every month, I'm not gonna spend 99 cents a month. Okay? The subscription model is actually, you may not like the idea of renting your music, but for someone who wants to be able to, you know, save storage space on their computer, doesn't want to, you know, spend all their time downloading, and who wants to have a configurable, hey, here are the songs I want today, and can, you know, and can do whatever they want, that's a lot of flexibility. The subscription service isn't something you like, that's fine. You don't like the concept of renting your music. But it's actually a very interesting and useful business model. The problem is, as soon as that model's in danger, because the companies know it's out there. If they know that their songs can just be copied, there's no reason for the music companies to agree to those rental scenarios if they're not guaranteed. And I'm not saying this is right, okay? This is just the, you know, this is just the way the music industry is, and we can rail against it as much as we want. They aren't showing any signs of changing, no matter how many times they get ridiculed, no matter how many people say, you're just being stupid now, it's not going to change. And if Microsoft doesn't at least try to address the problem, because you're right, it may get broken, but, you know, it's not... It's taken a while for this most recent DRM to be broken, and it may not be tomorrow that it's broken, okay? But the whole point is, and there's some good things about the way this works. I think it's got a lot of potential with the way they set up the fair use thing, okay? And I'll get into that in a second. I'm not against this tool at all, but I'm just saying from a business standpoint, I can understand the concerns, and I can understand why Microsoft is addressing it so quickly. With the subscription services out there, it is a legitimate business concern. You may not think so, and you may disagree, but for a company who is making their money that way and getting most of their money that way, it is definitely a business concern, because they can't assume all their customers are going to be, you know, oh, well, I'll still keep paying the $15, because money is the bottom line for most people, and most people, once they don't have to, aren't going to. I mean, I don't think that's a most people thing. So I can see their concern. I'm not trying to say they're right or wrong, but I just want to say that's what I'm trying to say. You see what I'm saying? I mean,
uh-huh.
But the bottom line is, I mean, honestly, I don't know. From a strictly the basic software in a non-subscription service, I think this is the exact way it should be handled. Because the software doesn't just bash through the copy protection. It actually requires a valid key. It requires you to unlock the music before you can copy it away to another format.
Yeah.
I think that's awesome. I think that is the way it should be handled.
Yeah, you have to already own it.
Because that's the first reasonable fair use tool I've seen. You know, most of the time it's just rip it away. I don't care, you know, and that's silly. There's got to be some middle ground here.
Actually,
and that's what I'm saying.
The always evolving to try to stay one step ahead of Apple tool that I used for ripping or for unlocking my Fairplay stuff. I cannot for the life of me remember what it was called. But it worked the same way. It used the key that was already embedded in iTunes for your
account. And see, that's a good way to handle it. But And like I said, the only place I can kind of see where they're coming from is subscriptions. Because the bottom line is that, you know, fair use, you can argue fair use till you're blue in the face. If you, you know, you're not really getting the rights to that song. You're getting, you know, you're renting it, like you said. And legally, I mean, you can argue that all day and night, but I can definitely see why there's concern there. As far as other stuff goes, I don't see any reason for them not to deal with this. And there was actually, Engadget had a plea, and, you know, Engadget's always for the open source and for, you know, for removing any kind of DRM. Like I said, I've said before, there definitely needs to be content management out there. I don't, you know, it needs to be at least an option. I'm not against DRM, I'm against invasive DRM. And this is a way to, and this is a way to strip the DRM, or even, you know, there is a halfway point here where they could meet and say, hey, here's what we're gonna do, instead of just, you know, there's no flexibility, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. That's the problem I have with this. In the way they're handling, you know, their DRM, they've got no flexibility, and that all comes back to the music industry. You know, people can, you know, yell at Microsoft and Apple, but they're, you know, without the music industry signing off on it, they got nothing. You know what I mean? So there is no other answer for these companies,
yeah,
other than to do it. I mean, they can't say, then the music companies say, fine, we're done. You know, we've come a long way with the music companies in the last
and
few years.
If they say, fine, we're done, then we're done with them.
Okay,
I mean,
you may be done with them, but you know what? The world
CD
isn't
sales,
done with them. I mean,
CD sales are still dropping. As digital music sales
I understand
rise.
That. But there is going to be someone out there doing DRM.
What's the lowest?
If Microsoft says, no, we're not going to do it, that's just going to open up the gates for someone else. Because DRM isn't going away. I mean, that's a real great thought to say, hey, if we just boycott and if Microsoft just stands up to them, it's not a good business decision for Microsoft. It's, you know, it's not a good, because someone else is going to come in and say, hey, fine, we've got DRM. DRM is, you know, all over the place. There's always new DRM schemes coming up, and always new, and generally, it's not Microsoft who's writing it, or, you know, that a lot of times it's someone saying, hey, I've got this DRM scheme I've come up with, and they'll develop it, but, you know, someone else is out there coming up with this stuff. I mean, I'm not saying this is the way it should be, but I'm just saying that's the way it is. We can say, hey, we're done with you, we're not gonna, but people still want their music. We're never gonna see, you know, the Napster of old, which, I, of course, never downloaded anything from. Right? Of course not. Back in the day. Back when music sharing was first becoming popular. But, I don't know where the compromise is, but there is one. It's just the music companies have got to come around to it, and they may never. They are slowly losing business from their CD sales, and you're right. I mean, they are definitely taking a hit, and eventually either they'll figure it out or somebody will. You know, but at this point, I mean, I don't think Microsoft can just say, no, we're not going to patch it. Which is what people wanted them to do. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I was kind of hoping that Microsoft would, would kind of, kind of be closed but open, you know, that, yeah. Yeah, we've issued a fix, but, you know, you don't have to use it, hint, hint,
yeah.
You know.
Well, and really what they've done is they've basically, from what I was reading, sounds like they've released the fix to their channel partners, here, let me kind of read some of this email, because it gets pretty long-winded, On August 28th, 2006, Microsoft released an update to the individualized black box component designed to ensure that client applications using Windows Media Format SDK version 9.5 who individualized to this latest version are robust against a new circumvention tool. That's a lot of words, but it doesn't sound like they're forcing individual companies to upgrade to it necessarily. They use the word individualized several times in there. But I don't know. We'll see. And a lot of this doesn't mean a whole lot to me because I don't know how their whole internal system works. And there's a lot of there's a lot of discussion about workarounds and all that. But I don't know. I gotta say that I wish they could find a compromise. The only place I can see, honestly, like I said, the only place I can really see to worry about this is subscriptions. But maybe they need to, maybe subscriptions need to be under a different DRM. Okay, maybe but the bottom line is the licensors aren't gonna be okay with that. It's not really a win situation for the consumer anyway. It's all a lose-lose situation for the consumers. And the more this battle goes on, the tougher it gets for us as consumers. And you know what I mean? We're the ones who suffer.
Yeah, the problem is that the music companies are already out to screw the consumers anyway.
Oh, I don't disagree at all.
Yeah, so without the white hats, coming up with stuff like this,
I don't have anything bad to say about the guys who came up with this, but from Microsoft
is
exactly what the only thing you can expect from them. You can hope.
Stuff like this is at least giving us the benefit of a reach around.
I don't know about that. A reach around. Never mind, I'm not going to get into that. We're not talking reach arounds on this show. I don't know. It's just. This crap just drives me nuts. It's one of the reasons I don't buy music online. I seriously considered it when I got my Dell DJ. I seriously considered buying music online, and then I went, it's just, who do I go with? Okay, once I go with them, how big a pain is it if I buy a new device? It's like, okay, it's a nightmare. Okay, and then there's the fair use stuff out there, but that works for so long, and, I was hesitant to go with Audible until I found out I could rip Audible to an MP3. I lose all the Audible features, but, I have an MP3 player that...
And you greatly increase the size of the file.
Yeah, but I have an MP3 player that's not compatible with, with Audible. So, for me...
Oh, man, well,
that's,
then there you go.
That's, but it's like, all across the board, it's, But, like I said, I think DRM is going to be around.
You know what is compatible with Audible? My pocket PC6700.
Shut up. I'm going to have a far cooler mobile device than you soon. And you're going to drool. If I ever bring it out there, you're going to drool over my new mobile device. I'm getting a new laptop from work. Okay, I got to let the listeners know. Uh-huh. I'm getting a new laptop from work. When I got my laptop I've got now, I went with a 15-inch Toshiba because we just bought the CEO of our company, my grandfather, a 17-inch, and the thing was a freaking brick. It was thicker than my already, chubby 15-inch, weighed about 80 billion pounds, and was a luggable at best. It was not a portable. It was not a mobile computer. I didn't want to carry that on my arm every day, but recently we upgraded his 17-inch to a Core Duo and all this, and it was the new Toshiba. And it's half as thick as my 15-inch. It weighs as much or less, and it's got all the features. It runs cooler. There was no downside to it, and I really can use a 17-inch screen is going to help me a lot. So I'm getting a 17-inch Toshiba that's got a 256-meg NVIDIA dedicated discrete graphics chipset and all that. So, very discreet. Basically, I'm gonna use it for work and maybe some gaming at home. But I've got all that video power for Photoshop, you know. So I'll be getting that in the next week or so. So I will trump your PPC 6700 at least in sheer power of my portable unit. Although,
yeah, I really, really don't think that laptop's going to be all that pocketable.
Dude, have you seen my pockets? I'm a big boy. I'm going to have a special pocket sewed. Of course, it's gonna have to be a skirt so that it can COVID. Anyway, I'm gonna have a laptop skirt, dude. I could totally sell a laptop skirt. Anyway, tired of hearing about Jeff's freaking 6700, so he's gonna have to hear about my laptop for a while.
Hey, Microsoft's about to end support for Windows XP.
Yeah, Service Pack 1. Which brings us to topic number two. We're gonna stick with Microsoft for a little while here, okay, guys? Wow, we really drove that fair use for Windows Mobile into the ground.
That's October 10th, by the way. If you're still dumb enough to be running Service Pack 1,
it's free. Fucking upgrade. Anyway.
There's absolutely no reason why you should still be running.
Well, there's a lot of people who are like, oh, but now Microsoft makes sure I've got a real version. Well, freaking cough it up and buy a real version of your operating system, okay? Don't tell me how much cheaper freaking Apple is, because in the long run, it's not. So I bought my copy of XP.
Yeah, because the full version, because the pricing is now out. The chickens off the basket. I don't know what I'm saying here, but the full version is the full version and upgrade version pricing for Vista is now out, and cat's out of the bag. That's what I was thinking of. I don't know where I got chicken in the basket.
Chickens.
All right.
Yes.
You can ask Josh. I've been having one of
Jeff,
those
Jeff
days.
Was saying
I went
stuff
a little
earlier. I don't know. he was trying to say enough, but I think he started out saying even, and it came out Evanuff. And I just said that's my new battle cry. Evanuff! But, you know, he's just been typing crazy all day, and now he's talking crazy. Here, I'll finish for you. Vista's pricing is out. Amazon has had it up since August 15th. And they've got pricing across the board on Vista.
Full version of Vista Ultimate, $399. The amount you've paid for every little pissant dot upgrade of OS X in the same amount of time since XP came out, $720.
Yeah, I wonder. I don't know. Where's the value?
$400, $720.
Okay, the upgrade version.
That's the most you can spend. That's it. Now I'm going to get the Windows Vista Ultimate upgrade, which is going to be $360. That's not what Ars Technica says.
Okay, according to Amazon.
Yeah, $260 seems a lot more. $260 sounds a lot more right. That I think is a typo.
Because I'm looking at the Amazon page right now, which there'll be a link in the show notes.
$260, $720. $260. That's two Apple upgrades. Okay, so that's Leopard, which gives you previous versions and virtual desktops. And Tiger. Okay, And then look what I get with Vista.
We're not even going to... We've talked about
Ultimate,
it.
Ultimate, baby!
And then if you need extra licenses, and I'm not sure about the license pricing, it seems a little high, because that's one thing they're doing is allowing you to buy extra licenses without buying extra media. It's more than the upgrade cost. It is $359 for a license, an additional license for Ultimate. But I don't know how many stock licenses they're coming with. I've heard rumors that the home edition is actually going to be multiple licenses. I don't know.
Well, I mean, the student teacher edition of Office is.
Well,
that's a
yeah,
three license.
Yeah, it's actually, I know that. It's actually three licenses, and that's what my brother and sister use. It's entirely possible that they're doing that, but there are licenses that are keeping you from having to buy a whole nother copy. So that's good, but I think they're a little overpriced. But the whole lineup's out. The Home Basic upgrade is only $100. It's like the XP Home upgrade.
Yeah.
Home Premium...
Very, very reasonable.
...is, where's the upgrade?
Maps closely to XP Media Center Edition, basically. If you have XP Media Center now, Vista Home Premium is what you want to
there's,
do. Unless you just want to go
straight
to Ultimate.
Well, there's also Business, which is Pro.
Ultimate!
The Business version, which is Pro.
Ultimate.
But I gotta say, the Business upgrade's $199, which, you know, clocks in right at where the old XP upgrade was. So the prices are about what we expected. Ultimate is not the, you know, $500 and more dollars people predicted along the line. $400 is a lot for buying it out of the box, but you get a huge discount for buying the upgrade. And most people aren't going to need Ultimate. Ultimate isn't for everyone. Premium, full price for Home Premium is $239 if you don't own it already. So, across the board, I gotta say, I'm impressed with those prices. It also got a release date, January 30th, 2007. Same day, Office 2007 releases. So, and I haven't seen pricing on Office 2007.
I don't know what the pricing is going to be there, but I'm going to buy it anyway.
Actually, I just went ahead and did a search on Amazon, and apparently they know. Professional 2007's $500. There's an Office Ultimate, which is the Ultimate upgrade is $539. I don't know what the Ultimate better freaking, wax my car or something. But those will be available. But the student teacher is still $149. Home and student. And it's actually the home and student now, so people don't have to lie and say they're a student. Which is good news. A lot of interesting Microsoft news. A little bit of Zune news. Toshiba will be manufacturing the Zune. I've heard things from, this is the smartest thing Microsoft's ever done, to what the hell was Microsoft thinking? And this is the worst thing they've ever done, it's going to kill the Zune. I don't know why people would think this would kill the Zune. Personally, I think it's a good idea to have Toshiba, take the hardware hit on that and Microsoft brand it.
And the, I can't remember what, Giga something, Giga Tune, Giga, but, the Zune bears a more than superficial resemblance to a,
Topless Dancer, no.
To a Toshiba, no, to a Toshiba,
Gigabeat.
Media player
Gigabeat?
Already. So that's the Gigabeat. That's not completely unheard of.
I think that's the end of our Microsoft news for the evening. Now let's talk. I do have a couple more computer things I want to talk about real quick before we dive into some Sony news. Core 2 Duo laptops. If you've got a Pentium M or a Core Duo and aren't itching for an upgrade, don't need the dual core of it. If you've got a Pentium M, if you've got a Core Duo, it's a ho-hum upgrade. There's a reason they're coming in at the same price. They use a little less power. They run 2 to 3 degrees cooler in most applications. They do, on the extreme, get up to 30 minutes more of power out of them.
Extreme!
But that's like if you shut everything down but your monitor on the dimmest setting. I mean, it's not real impressive. They're entering the market at the same price as the ones they're replacing for the most part. Alienware just basically swapped out on their Area 51s across the board. They swapped out the processors and didn't change the price yesterday, and today they actually increased the rebate on it. The instant rebate's gone from $200 to $300, so right now it's $100 cheaper than if you bought your Alienware last week. So, there we go.
So are the people that bought their Alienware last week all pissy?
I don't know. I didn't buy an Alienware because it was $400 more than the Toshiba I was looking at. And I was like, I get more video, but it's a business machine. I cannot justify an Alienware. As much as I would like to. And one last note about 802.11n.
See, I don't have the note.
Yeah,
I don't have the
so
show
Jeff
notes.
Can't spur me. I vetoed him having the show notes. Now I can just make stuff up. Like, the next show note is Jeff wants to wear a tutu and dance around. I just made that up. I just made that up. There's nothing really about Jeff's tutu. I wasn't supposed to mention it. 802.11n, the saga continues. I've talked about this on a couple of podcasts recently, how 802.11n wouldn't be a standard until 2008. Well, the Standards Commission has actually found a way to make this work. March of next year, version 2 of the 802.11n draft will be available. What they're going to do is they're going to take hardware built under version 2 and actually test it. It'll go through a certification process that it's interoperable. So all the version 2 stuff will be interoperable. Now, and it'll be interoperable forward. Now, it may not get any of the new features. It may be fewer features, but it'll be, close. It'll be an increased speed. So March, April of next year, we will start seeing 802.11n routers that are really interoperable. They're out there now, but they can really do bad things. Don't buy one now. So, that's good news. We're not going to have, it'll be a year after that before we see a final, specification, but that's happiness. Quick note on Star Wars. For those of you who like the original trilogy, the way it originally showed in the theaters, don't like Greedo shooting first, don't like any of that crap, September 12th, a version is coming out that has just the original. So,
presumably the THX retouched version so that, they're not all faded
out.
Yeah,
I'm going to assume that's that, because there were no actual story changes or anything. They were just, they cleaned up some of the effects and they didn't add any of the digital stuff. They just cleaned up what was there. They fixed one glaring omission of Darth Vader's lightsaber, yes, I'm anal and I could describe the scene, but I won't. And there's still some stuff they didn't fix, but we won't go there. But they did fix some stuff in the THX version, and just cleaned it up, hopefully. September 12th, look for that. Speaking of movies, there's a next-gen format war. Blu-ray versus HD DVD.
Blu-ray's
well,
going
Blu-ray
down.
Has had several stumbling points. I had a conversation with my uncle this week, and he thought I was wrong across the board about saying he should wait, and he thought that from what he's seen, Blu-ray's the dominant technology, and it's all the people are talking about in the stores, and that there's more movies for Blu-ray.
Is your uncle ever
no,
right?
No, he's not. He's really not. But, you know, this is my Uncle Jake. But the bottom line is, not only are there more HD DVD titles, more HD DVD players out there, HD DVD is already higher capacity because Blu-ray hasn't rolled out their 50 gig. I think it's higher capacity because they're already doing dual layer, and turns out Blu-ray can't get dual layer to work. It's really sad. It just doesn't work. No one can get it to work out of the box. So the 50 gigabyte that is needed for longer films aren't out there. I mean, it's just not. It's not there, and it's really you know, it's really kind of sad. Blu-ray is a stumbling technology. It's the technically superior technology. You can get more space on it. It's got, you know, but the $1,000 players and, you know, nothing but stumbling blocks along the way. No one's exclusive except for Sony and, you know, that are actually owned, you know, if they're owned by, you know, Sony, Toshiba, Samsung, then they've picked a side. Otherwise, you know, companies aren't picking sides in this battle. Not really. I mean, Microsoft didn't put an HD DVD drive in because he wanted to make sure that, you know, they wanted to make sure whoever wins, wins. You know, and it looks like at this point, you know, there's no clear-cut winner and it'll be a while, but HD DVD's got some headway. I was at Walmart the other day, just, you know, looking at the movies. Handful of Blu-ray, a ton of HD DVD. But the real device that people are always saying is going to save Blu-ray is the PS3. Couple problems with that. I mean, yes, it'll be the cheapest Blu-ray player on the market. That ain't saying much, but it will be. But here's what Sony's doing to get this going. They're cannibalizing lasers from other players. There are not enough Blu-ray lasers out there. You know, the optics just aren't out there, and there's already going to be a shortage. Sony keeps claiming up and down they're going to meet their production goals for the PS3. First of all, it doesn't fucking matter. I don't think they're going to sell out their initial production run at the numbers they originally, you know, predicted anyway. A lot of luster has fallen off the PlayStation. So.
Yeah, I really don't think the PS3 is going to be able to compete against the Xbox 360, which will have had a 1 year head start by that point. And, you know, on the gameplay side, you know, there's still the Wii out there. And, you know, people are just not going to spend $600 on a PS3. And I think the more intriguing question is if the PS3 flops like we all expect it to, or at least I do. I think Josh
pretty much
does.
Do.
If it, you know, if the PS3 flops, is that it for Sony? Is Sony done?
I think it's the beginning of the end. Here's the thing about the PS3. Their selling point is it's like a computer. Okay.
Yeah, that's
different
positive.
Than Microsoft. How? I mean, Microsoft doesn't say it's like a computer, but Microsoft is a computer. It's meant to be the center of your digital home. It's got you know, there are very few capabilities other than graphics-wise that the PS3 has that Microsoft doesn't. Microsoft also has better integration across the board than Sony. I mean, if this is where they want to compete, if they want to compete as the entertainment console, they're going to have a really rough road ahead of them. The only thing they got going for them is Blu-ray, and guess what? There'll be an HD DVD drive for $200 for the Xbox 360. I mean, you know, and yeah, no, they're not using the games, but I'll tell you what, most games don't use up a full damn DVD. Okay? I mean, you know. But the bottom line is, the only people I see who are really interested in the PS3 are Sony fanboys. You know, Sony really, really missed the boat on this one, and it's just the last dominant area Sony had is looking like it's in danger. They're not music players or anything like that. They're not dominant in any of those at all.
Yeah, I really don't think that.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
For Sony, from the sound of it, they are they've decided to compete with Microsoft head to head. In Microsoft's backyard.
Well, you know, Microsoft had was late to the game with the Xbox.
And Sony's just not good enough anymore.
Microsoft was late to the game with the Xbox. They released after Sony. They had a lot of trouble. They you know what? It was a first-gen device. There were some stumbles there. The 360 had a little bit of a rough launch, but it was nothing like the PS2's roughness. It was nothing, you know, it wasn't, it was, you know, it's still one of the best game system launches I've seen. No one does them quite as well as Nintendo, but even Nintendo's made some mistakes. So,
yeah, I just really, really don't think this is going to go well.
I think they're screwed. Okay, we got one more thing we want to talk about before we get into our final two segments. Solo Media is slowly but surely coming back. I just today posted Atlantis 4 to Fiction-Wise. Should be available next Monday, unless something horribly goes wrong. In about 30 days from now, you can expect to see Atlantis 5. 6 is half-written. As far as fiction writing goes, that's my focus. I've got a couple other projects I'm going to play around with when I need a break, but neither of them is at the forefront. Atlantis is my main project. And Jeff's been talking about doing Unification Chronicles. Why don't you talk a little bit about what you're thinking there?
I have actually already, gone back and put all of the Unification Chronicles stuff on my mobile device, and I'm getting ready to start. I want to reread it from the beginning so that I get back into the flow of things. But I expect to start writing issue or continue writing issue 7 within a week or two.
That's very cool. So. I think we're both gonna go with Fiction Wise because we've just realized
we're probably losing money on it, but it's good exposure, and I'm still doing this as a serial, but I'm doing this with a serial with a mind to being able to to get this. You know, to compile the issues together and publish them as novels later. Because not everybody reads
them. That's true, and I always thought that eventually I would compile Atlantis, too. I'm changing some of my philosophy about how I handle Atlantis and titling it and stuff, and I'm going to start naming each individual issue rather than naming arcs. And a couple other things, but...
You bastard, after you convinced me to name arcs.
Actually, originally I wanted to name individual issues. And then you were like, let's name arcs. And I was like, okay. And then you were like, let's name individual issues. And I was like, screw you, hippie, I'm not changing. And then today, I was looking at how it gets posted and how everything... And I just think it... I think, especially since I'm not going to be as regular as I was when I originally started it, it's better off to... I'm better off to rethink how I do it. That's my main thing. Rethinking how, you know, with my focus changing and... You know, I'm not committing to a month. I'm going to shoot for, releasing one every 30 days, but there are no promises. So, I don't know. I'm kind of excited about getting back into writing.
And the blogs.
We're doing lots of blogs.
I will be chronicling my day-to-day writing or not writing on jeffcurvin.net. And Josh has a new blog for
Atlantis. Yeah, I talked about it last week, AtlantisRises.net. I posted a character bio there last week. This week I posted a little article about where, how Atlantis kind of came to be as a story. It is intentionally vague about some of its predecessors' plot points because, they're kind of obvious, they would really reveal something down the road. So, there we go. We're definitely back as Solo Media. We're not going to be as out there. Woo-hoo! We never really went away. I mean, I guess it's time for the Mobile Minute. We're kind of meandering tonight. Let's get on the ball.
Meander. Okay, Mobile Minute. First off, an update on my hosted exchange fiasco. I have finally gotten hosted exchange to work. And I gotta say, once you get it to work, it is really frickin' cool. I know. I
was trying not to interrupt the podcast.
Get into that.
I was just trying to send you a friendly reminder. And you had to say, I know. Because you have the attention span of a gnat.
I'm ADD, okay?
Yeah, you're definitely ADD.
Wait.
Right around the midsection. What?
Where was I?
Timbuktu.
Where was... Sadly, this is true. One of the side effects of Seroquel is weight gain. All right. Where was I? Oh, yeah. Hosted Exchange. Right. Hosted Exchange is really freaking cool once you get it working, especially on Windows mobile devices that are, for some reason, much more competent with Exchange than they are with IMAP 4.
I wonder why.
Imagine why.
It's almost as if the same company writes the operating system for that as writes Exchange. I don't know. Anyway.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy. Yeah. And actually, it is almost as though. Because if you've ever actually seen the way Microsoft works internally, there's not a lot of communication between the Windows Mobile guys and the Exchange guys.
Well, yeah, but they've got access to the same data. And that's the real key. Data access.
But basically now, yeah, I make a change on my Pocket PC, and it's instant, whether it's an appointment or a task or an email, that change is instantly reflected in Outlook Web, which is what I use at the office, since you can't have two Outlook, or you can't have two Exchange accounts on the same copy of Outlook, so I have I have my company's Exchange account on Outlook, and then for my personal stuff, I just run it in a web browser. And then at home, I'm using Outlook 2007, where it actually, Outlook 2007, because it's a beta, has issues of its own, but it works pretty well with Exchange. So really happy with this, and as I kind of get settled into it, starting to think that, yeah, this is worth $7 a month. This is pretty slick. If you have a pocket PC and you use Outlook on your desktop anyway, I highly recommend taking a look at forsmartphone.net and see what you think of the services they offer. Let's see. Speaking of services, Netflix has finally gotten on the ball. There is a mobile version of Netflix now, so if you're away from your desk and you want to double-check what's coming up in your queue and you want to add a movie or something like that, you can now go to netflix.com/mobile, and it's formatted quite nicely for either Blazor or Pocket IE. So that's happy if you're a Netflix user. I keep meaning to be a Netflix user,
you're
but
a user.
I don't watch most of the movies I already own. I mean, yeah, I've got several DVDs that are still in shrink wrap.
And besides,
that I haven't
you know
yet.
Someone who has all the Netflix DVDs ever.
A friend of mine is basically a one person Netflix cloning house. Yeah, so if I ever want to borrow a DVD, I just have to go ask Dave.
Give Dave's address while you're at it, just so, you know, they know where to go.
Okay. Because we're service-oriented. Come on, how many Daves can there be?
That's my point. You want to narrow it down for him. I mean, Dave is pretty generic. I've known a lot of Daves, so if you really want to...
On the software side, SPB Diary 2.0 came out today. This is part of the ever-escalating arms race between SPB Software House, which I believe is located in, not Russia, but it's one of the former Soviet territories.
Territory!
So you got them. And then you've got SBSH Software, which is SBSH.net, makers of the popular Pocket Breeze and iLauncher and a number of other today screen-oriented programs, which is based in Israel. I love the international flair that that mobile software has. You don't see as much of this on Windows desktop. SPB Diary is basically competes head to head with Pocket Breeze. They both bring together, much like the old dashboard, which doesn't seem to be updated as much anymore. They're Today Screen plugins that give you one-stop shopping for all of your appointments, all of your tasks, your email, your contacts, notes, all on your Today Screen. So that you really, if you set it up right, you really never have to run any other individual applications. Everything's on your Today Screen. Some of the nice features in SPB Diary 2, are that it's much, much more D-pad friendly. It's now completely navigatable with just the directional pad on your, so you don't have to break out the stylus, which was an area that it had lost to Pocket Breeze before. And it's on its contact tab, which it provides for free, by the way. Contacts is just part of the application. With Pocket Breeze, you have to buy a separate add-on called Contact Breeze to get contacts. But with SPB Diary, they've added a photo contact feature that bears a suspicious resemblance to the photo speed dial popular on the Trio 700W.
Sweet.
So, honestly, I still can't pick between the two. I've been installing and uninstalling them back and forth, and I still can't quite figure out which company I want to go with, because you end up, these are suites of like five or six different applications. Each company has a weather program, each company has a launcher program, each company has a planner program. They both have clock or time programs. All of they're all today screen plugins, and these. I mean, it's kind of spooky the way these two companies keep duking it out. And I still can't pick between them. I've registered most of the software from both companies, and I just can't decide which. There's pros and cons to both. Something that SPB Diary does, Pocket Breeze doesn't do. Stuff that Pocket Breeze does, SPB Diary doesn't do. And I'm fraught.
You are fraught.
But there'll be links to both in the show notes. There was one more thing I wanted to mention, and I just fell completely out of my head.
Okay.
All right. Well,
I've got
that
two
then.
Quick things to cover.
I guess that'll do it.
I've
for
only
the
got two
minute.
Things to cover. My top and my bottom. No wait. First of all, I wanted to do a quick little review of JLA number one. DC, in the wake of Infinite Crisis, has relaunched several of their titles with new creative teams and all that. One of them is JLA. And basically, it's getting it back to the core players, Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman. And that's where the new JLA starts. It's those three, and their first issue is really about them picking it up. And deciding who they want to be. They talk about a lot of people. And through this whole story is another story, is kind of a subplot running looking at Red Tornado. I'm going to give a quick little rundown of who Red Tornado is. Basically, he's a cyborg that has all these wind powers. Okay, I mean, that's the gist of the character, but he's got a really interesting history. He's been thought dead 6 or 7 times by the JLA, and he just keeps coming back. And
he's a cyborg. How did
it's a lot more complicated than that, actually. He's not just a cyborg. He's actually possibly a spirit inhabiting. It gets real complicated. I was trying not to go into this. For friendliness' sake, I learned a lot about Red Tornado a couple weeks ago because one of my favorite comics sites, Comics 101, was doing a trivia thing. They had 20 questions. And if you answered them all, you got this ultimate hardcover edition of Kingdom Come, which is like a $75 book. So I went through and five or six of the questions were about Red Tornado. I didn't know a lot about him. I mean, I'd seen him in a few appearances.
And I remember Josh going, Red Tornado? Who the hell knows anything about Red Tornado?
Well, no, I do. And Scott Tipton, who writes Comics 101, they call him the professor for a reason. I have a lot of comic book knowledge. I know a lot about the DC Universe. That's my strong point. And these were all DC Universe questions. 13 of them I answered pretty much without a problem. It was really the Red Tornado and a couple other ones I had to double check some of my details on. It was a really complicated thing. It was really. But a lot of them were about Red Tornado, so I learned a lot about him. He's a really interesting character. He's died several times. I think he's got a really convoluted history from Earth 2 to Earth 1 and all this stuff. But he's actually an android who's married to a woman, and they've adopted a child, and he has a life, and he's definitely got a soul. That's all I'll say, because it's very obvious in this issue of JLA. But he's definitely going to become a key player in the new JLA, which I think is cool. They're taking a very powerful DC Universe character who's never really gotten the spotlight and really looking at him. Brad Metzer is doing the writing, and he wrote Identity Crisis, which really led to Infinite Crisis, and it led to all this, tearing apart of the DC Universe. And he also had a very good run on Green Arrow. And he's actually a novelist. I don't know, I haven't actually read any of his novels, but his comic writing has made me kind of interested in reading them. I've seen one bad review of it, who just didn't like his style. But I like it because it really, to me, gets back to the classic JLA and comic-type storytelling, and he really has a good grasp of the three main characters, and he really understands. He's got a lot of respect for the history of the DCU, which is something that's very strong in the best DC writers right now. Mark Waid, Geoff Johns, Greg Rucka, they all have really solid understandings of the history of the DC Universe. So I highly recommend it. It's a fairly accessible issue. You don't have to know everything about him, about Red Tornado. It really does give you some introduction there, and it's very interesting. So I definitely highly recommend it. The other thing I want, so that's my little short comic review. Highly recommend it. It's a good jumping on point. And even before that was JLA number 0 last month, which did a lot of introduction stuff. And then my daughter had a fit, and it was hard for me to figure out where I was. Where am I? Who am I? One last topic I want to cover. Louisiana passed this game law that said basically it made it illegal to sell games to minors.
Unenforceable.
And it's been ruled that it's, you can't enforce it. Their definition of adult content and mature content and what necessitates, stopping children from buying it was too vague. There's a big long article about it. I've got a link in the show notes, but it's crazy. I don't know. It's just I'm glad that this censorship is crap. I mean, there are some games who with cuss words and with a lot of violence. There should definitely be some limitations there. But hey, this is getting ridiculous. I don't know if everybody's heard about this game called Bully that's coming out. It's Rockstar. We're all shocked. Rockstar Games, a controversial game from them? No, never. But it's interesting because it's all about basically being a bully and picking on other kids in school. Walmarts have been boycotted and all kinds of schools, and all kinds of stores, have been boycotted and people are just going on about it. And it's like, okay, maybe parents seem to be paying attention to what their kids are doing. People go, these games aren't written for kids. I hate to break it to you. There's no great conspiracy to corrupt your children. These games are written for adults who, are discerning and make up their own minds. Just because they're a video game and the video games get a bad rap for being,
Please quit trying to protect me from myself.
Well, you do need protection. Well, I'm going to have to disagree with that. Please protect him from himself. Ow. Because Jeff's insane. But, yeah.
Yes, quite.
That's no good. I don't know. It's just stupid.
It's like the most lackadaisical kind of whatever ending.
Well, I'm all
suddenly we both
I've
run
out of
gas.
Steam. I'm just tired. But that's the bottom line. There's a lot of this crap of people trying to protect. But you know what? Protect your own kids. Protect yourself, but don't protect me. Leave me the fuck alone. That's my message to these morons. Leave me alone. I don't need your help. You know what I mean? It's like, you guys suck. So.
Yeah. Alright, so
I think
do
so. That's all I got. Unless you got something. Alright, that's it. Maximum Geek 67. Woo, almost 69. Alright, bye.